From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. What began as a campaign rallying cry?
We're going to have a wall. We're going to have a barrier. We're going to have something that's going to be very strong.
Became a core issue for the Trump administration, leading to an historic government shutdown.
These are steel barriers in high priority locations. That is our plan. Border security, DACA, TPS, and many other things. Straightforward, fair, reasonable, and common sense with lots of compromise.
Democrats rejected that plan, and last Friday, President Trump declared a state of emergency to access funding for a border wall that Congress refused to give him. The political stalemate leaves undocumented students in flux, the very students served by Freedom University in Atlanta. Executive Director Emiko Soltis is here to talk us about the Freedom School model that was launched in the civil rights era and how it's supporting these students today. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. Also with us, Arizbet Sanchez and Raymond Partolan. They're both DACA recipients who work with Freedom U, and thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us.
Hi, Arizbet. Thank you for being here. Emiko, I'm going to start with you, though. A little on Freedom University's origins, the Freedom School idea, where it started and why.
Great. The Freedom School idea was really birthed during the height of the Black Freedom Movement and the Civil Rights era in particular. Many people know about 1964 Freedom Summer when student activists with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee went down to Mississippi. And many people remember Freedom Summer for its voter registration drives, but many people forget about the legacy of the Freedom Schools that were established. And the point of the Freedom Schools was to really mobilize Black citizens in Mississippi and provide completely free classes for them. But the whole goal was to create politically conscious and politically active people in Mississippi. And that whole model is also based on the idea that education can be liberatory, that education can be for action and political action. And the curriculum was also very culturally relevant and based on the needs of the students. And teaching was more based on dialogue rather than lecturing and really focused on students being experts in their own lives, and that teachers were also learning from students rather than just lecturing them.
So this was relaunched here in Atlanta in 2003. Why then?
It was actually in 2011, right after Policy 416 and 434, which were passed by the Georgia Board of Regents in the fall of 2010, banned undocumented students from the top public universities and from in-state tuition throughout the state. And so Freedom University was founded in the fall of 2011 and was brought to Atlanta in 2013 in order to provide undocumented students who are banned from public higher education a space where they could continue their education in a safe environment and learn from university professors from throughout Atlanta to really restore their sense and love of learning and really learn that they have human rights and the right to education, regardless of what state's policies might be.
Now, Freedom U organized a protest last week during a Georgia Board of Regents meeting to change those policies, forbidding students from DACA recipients from getting in-state tuition and getting entry into these institutions. What are you proposing?
Right. So this direct action was on Tuesday, February 12th. And this is in a long history of direct action that Freedom University students engage in. At Freedom University, yes, we provide completely free college-level classes. We provide college application and scholarship assistance so that one in three of our students wins a full scholarship to college. But we also engage in, again, this Freedom School goal of creating engaged, politically active young people, right? And so a part of that is this movement leadership training, which involves encouraging students who want to make sure that their voice on issues of immigration and access to education are being heard. And so a part of that involves direct actions. And so we, in this particular case, there are nine people, four ministers, three teachers, a community member, and Comedy Central host, Jordan Klepper, who disrupted this Board of Regents meeting, really bringing attention to the fact that these policies have been in place for 9 years, these bans. Policy 416, again, which is one of only three states, Georgia is one of three states that actually have a type of admissions ban from public higher education, and also an in-state tuition ban, which is essentially an economic ban prohibiting undocumented young people from equal access to public higher education. And so the point of the protest was to bring attention to these policies, recognize that this is within a long history of educational segregation in the South, and that Georgia is violating undocumented students' human right to education under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 26.
Okay, and we have two of those politically active DACA recipients and students with us, or former students, Arizbeth and Raymond, both DACA recipients, as I said. Raymond, I want to start with you a little bit about growing up in Macon. What was that experience like for you?
Sure. So, again, thank you for having me on the show. I moved to the United States when I was one from the Philippines, and my family came here illegally on a work visa. And we didn't become undocumented, per se, until I was 10 years old, and we had settled in Macon, Georgia. And growing up in Macon was a huge challenge. Being outside of the metro Atlanta area, being farther down south in Georgia, I literally grew up right down the road from farm fields and livestock. And growing up there was a challenge insofar as I felt like there was no one around me that understood my struggle as an undocumented person. Mm. When I found out I was undocumented at the age of 10, I was in the fifth grade, and I had no idea what being undocumented would one day mean in my life. My parents told me that I was an illegal alien, and I went and told my best friend at the time that I was an illegal alien. And he said, Raymond, there is no way that you're an illegal alien because aliens come from outer space and they're green, and you are neither one of those things. And at that point, I thought, wow, this can't be that bad. And it wasn't until I got to high school when I started to really understand what it meant to be undocumented.
Yeah, take that in. How about for you, Arizbeth? You grew up in Norcross. What was that experience like for you? And that realization, when did it come for you?
Well, thank you for having us here. For me, my family came when I was 6 years old, and I always knew that I was undocumented. I think growing up, you just take up a lot of responsibilities, and you sort of realize that this is not normal. And so I always knew that it was that I was undocumented.
Yeah. Well, so Atlanta, of course, has a reputation for embracing diversity, but anti-immigration sentiment has existed in the city and the state, certainly, which narrowly elected Brian Kemp as governor, who made his views on the issue clear in this ad during the primary campaign.
I got a big truck, just in case I need to round up criminal illegals and take them home myself. Yep, I just said that. I'm Brian Kemp. If you want a politically incorrect conservative, that's me.
Well, then that politically incorrect conservative self-described was elected governor. So what did conversations sound like and look like for you during the election of 2018 when all of these issues were stirring up and at the forefront of candidates' platforms, Raymond?
Sure. So I actually worked tirelessly to prevent the election of Brian Kemp into office. I led and managed an effort called Asians for Abrams, and I directed a volunteer effort of people knocking on thousands of doors to get the word out about Stacey Abrams. I think it's important for people to realize that elections have consequences. The governor of the state of Georgia has the power to appoint the members of the Board of Regents. And as Emiko said, in 2010, the Board of Regents was the very policymaking body that promulgated these policies that currently ban undocumented students. And had our election in 2018 had a different outcome, we may be having a different conversation today about whether undocumented students could have access to our public colleges and universities here in our state.
Well, of course, campaigns often target emotions over the facts. And we do know, you know, there are criminal crimes committed by immigrants are by far lower than in the general population. But how do you think these prevailing beliefs that you grew up with, the people who are around you in your neighborhood or Arizbeth in your neighborhood in Norcross, match up with the reality? Anyone want to pick that up?
Right. So I would say that as an undocumented person growing up, I wasn't around very many undocumented people. It wasn't until I got to high school and I attended a program actually at the University of Georgia, a school that I am currently banned from as an undocumented person, called Leadership Sin Limites, or Leadership Without Limits, translated into English. And it was at that program in the summer of 2010 that I finally met other undocumented people just like me. And these were people who were excelling in school. who were passionate about their education and who wanted nothing more than to make this country a better place. I graduated from high school in 2011, a year after these bans took into effect. And I can certainly say that these bans affected me very personally. And I thought that no matter how hard I worked in school, there was a very likely chance that I wouldn't be able to make something out of my life, that I wouldn't have the chance to go to college. And I think that so many other people across this country face that same reality.
Mm. Raymond Partalin, he's from Freedom University, also with me, Arisbet Sanchez from the university, and Emiko Soltis, who's the executive director. And this is something, while some DACA recipients are protected from deportation, oftentimes their family members are not, and Georgia does have one of the highest deportation rates in the country. So, Emiko, how does Freedom University help students go through this experience of a parent or family member being deported?
Right. I appreciate what you said about DACA as well, but it's important for people to understand that many undocumented young people also don't qualify for DACA,
right, exactly,
which is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program that was announced by the Obama administration in 2015. And what's important to remember, June 15th, 2012, what's important for people to understand is that 1 in 13 children in Georgia has an undocumented family member, right? Many of our undocumented students don't qualify for DACA, and almost all of their parents don't have any type of authorization to be in the United States or any protection in the United States. And so what this means is that oftentimes young people are growing up in Georgia and across the United States living in constant fear of deportation and family separations. And while it's important that family separations really came into the national spotlight this year with focus on the border and family separation policies, many people forget that deportations in itself are family separations, right? And it's really important to recognize that immigration issues aren't solely at the border, but they're happening in our communities here in Georgia and in cities across the United States.
Right, but we don't have the same optics. We don't see it in the same way, especially when we're talking about young children. So I'm wondering for you, Arisbet and Raymond, you know, that kind of uncertainty and powerlessness with immigration status is very stressful. So Arisbet, how do you and the staff support students experiencing that kind of trauma?
At Freedom University, we make sure that a student always feels safe. Freedom University is one of the first places where they sort of become vulnerable and sort of tell other people that they are undocumented. It's mm-hmm. a safe place where you can talk about your experiences, what's happening at home. And so we make that space safe at all times for students. If anything is happening, if you want to talk about anything on the news, this is the time to do it for people with people who understand your situation and who can sort of provide support and a sort of solution
so
as a community.
What kind of conversations does that lead to, Emiko?
The conversations, like we mentioned, based on the Freedom School model, is that at our core, the students' lives are at the center of what we're teaching and what we're discussing, again, based on dialogue. But rather than simply talk about current events, we also talk about history and the making of illegal immigration and different types of race-based bans and quotas that have always been a part of the U.S. immigration system. And oftentimes this gives students context into the current political climate, that this didn't come from nowhere. Mm. And it's really important for people, especially in Georgia, to understand that, one, this used to be indigenous land, right? And the many people who are undocumented are descendants of indigenous people of these lands. So if we think about the terms illegal and who that really benefits when we are calling human beings illegal rather than certain acts, right? And people who were on Wall Street, who were tanking the economy and engaging in white-collar crime, we don't call them illegal bankers, right? That there is power involved in these terms, right? That we're calling young people who went kindergarten through 12th grade in Georgia public schools, whose families are paying taxes, state, federal taxes, into Social Security, whose benefits they will never receive, and calling them illegal. I think it's important to look at the larger social system and who that benefits when we are looking down for the source of our problems rather than looking up.
Well, Raymond, now you're working as an immigration paralegal, taking folks through the system.
Right.
So what has that meant for you, helping families through this process, when it's something that you yourself have gone through?
Sure. As you mentioned, I currently work as an immigration paralegal at one of the largest immigration law firms in the state of Georgia, Cook Baxter Immigration. And I think that having personally experienced our immigration system and after currently experiencing our immigration system, it helps me to better connect with the clients that we serve. It helps me to better understand their struggle and to understand how difficult it is to navigate our system. Our immigration system is outdated and it is in need of some major reform. And at this point, the only legislative body that can do that for us is Congress. And for many years, Congress has neglected to act on this issue. There are over 11 million undocumented people that live here in our country who whose futures are uncertain. Every single day, these people wake up and they don't know whether they're going to be able to drive to work and come home and see their kids again. And the time is now for Congress to stand up and say, we need to fix our broken immigration system. And I think it's important for people to know that over 65,000 undocumented students graduate from high schools across the country every single year. And the majority of these kids don't have the opportunity to go to college. As Emiko said, Georgia, South Carolina, and Alabama are three of the worst states in our country.
But you're hitting on a red meat issue for many conservatives who say that we shouldn't be paying for these people. You know that they don't belong here. They didn't come here legally. So I know it's a big thing to leave for this, but we've got half a minute left. Emiko, what's your response to those people in that argument?
Those people often. The rallying cry of the Tea Party movement and a lot of conservatives is that there should not be taxation without representation. Undocumented people are paying $7 billion into Social Security per year. DACA-eligible young people pay $1.7 billion in state and local taxes each year. They're paying taxes into this system, but they have no representation and no right to vote. This is a long history in the United States of accepting labor and denying people's civil and human rights.
Emiko Soltis, she is Executive Director of Freedom University, Arisbeth Sanchez, and Raymond Partolin. They work with Freedom University, both DACA recipients. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Well, that's all we have time for today. We will be back with more on Second Thought tomorrow, where, of course, we're on Facebook, on Twitter. You can stay in touch with us there.